woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, welcome back to Stacking Jacks. I'm Tamal. He's Mr. Mel Weber. SB futures up 250. NASDAQ futures up 48. Dow futures down 6. This is after we ducked down yesterday a little bit after the pretty ridiculous CPI numbers that some of us have been predicting for a while, that even our guys can't. Well, you can't fool all the people all the time. Is that the story, Manny? You can fool some of the people all the time, all the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time? Is that
yes, you can.
You can try. So I heard something last night or the other day that the...
Which reminds me to make sure we get into the president's speech yesterday.
Yes. Manny, keep careful of the girlfriend. Evidently, the Jeep is by far the number one carjacked vehicle.
Really?
Yeah.
I wonder why that is.
I don't know. But you almost had to cover the show yourself this morning. Last night we had a nice dinner with Audrey and John Flanagan from the show at our little spot over at Mart Anthony's, which we like to go, especially during the week. Great place. And driving on the Kennedy, and somebody decided they needed to get off on this exit in a Range Rover Discovery and did the two-lane sweep, and I think they missed us by an inch. And I don't know, how the hell do you not see a Suburban with the lights on and stuff? Or if you did, if you thought you have enough room, I never want to play a sport with that guy, because, I mean, clearly there was... Jack goes, does that guy have any idea how close he... I said, I don't think so. I mean, but he made his exit. It was okay. He was fine.
Well, I always get a kick out of the mindset, okay?
Yeah.
I missed my exit. So instead of going to the next exit and turning around, I'll put everybody else in danger because I'm more important. It's the same thing you get when someone misses a turn and then they're going to just stop and clog everything up in the middle. Don't go up to the next one and turn around. No, just try and wait until you can move over and everybody else can just wait. You know, it's like people live in their own worlds, and they have no idea what's going on in any other world around them.
That's exactly what it is.
What would Freud say? That they never left the anal stage, essentially?
Or the a-hole stage, I'm not sure which.
Well, did you ever read Freud on your own? Were you ever forced to read Freud stuff?
I mean, a little bit, but... Yeah, not a lot.
Well, basically, you go through a stage. I don't know if it's the anal or the oral or whatever it was, but all you have to do is cry, and somebody does something for you. They either feed you or change your diaper, basically, right? All you got to do is let out a big yell, and somebody runs to your aid, right? And I think a lot of I won't say young people today, because probably young people anytime, or any old people sometime, never left that stage. It's all about them. I mean, if you get stuck by somebody for a second, if some little old lady's crossing the street and you don't want to run her down and it costs you 10 seconds, you get to run through the next red light because you were delayed. Right? I mean, there's a logic there somewhere. But we all.
Yeah, or you're in the grocery store and you can just stop right in the middle of the aisle and maybe even have a conversation with somebody or something else, because there's nobody else that's going up and down the aisles that might want to get
out. No, it's all about you.
You know, there is... you know, it's even better, like on the concourse at a football game or a basketball game, when there's thousands of people trying to move, and nope, I'm right here in the middle. You guys, it's nice to see you all. Let's have a conversation. it's like people are just oblivious to what's going on around them.
Well, one of the interesting things is the people who do it absolutely would be outraged if they were accused of it. And one day, I don't know what was going on, but some lady was in her Land Discovery, the Blondie in the Land Rover Discovery, right? Was doing something and like honking at somebody to hurry up across the street or something. And I was stuck the other way, and both windows were open. And I said, "It's really all about you, isn't it?" The look on her face was like I shot her. Well, no, it's not. I would never be like that. But you are.
But you are. Yes.
But I mean, the thought.
I will say this: that more people than not, you know, take the grocery store as an example. More people than not, when they notice that they've been, you know, kind of in the way, they inevitably apologize.
Without a doubt.
At which point I would say, not a problem. You know, honestly, if I really don't, you know, if I want to cruise through the grocery store, I shouldn't go at 1 in the afternoon anyway on Saturday.
We just had a guy in a big truck really help us out to get in our parking space. I mean, so it's not like, you know, everybody's an idiot. I mean, they're not. I mean, which hopefully makes the other people stand out. I was telling Maddie on the way in that I had like three or four conversations because I was all over the place yesterday, and every single conversation somebody lobbed one in there about people don't want to work and nobody can go back to these restaurants and blah blah blah. And it is stunning to me, Kevin, in today's world. I'm gonna say, well, one of the ladies in the office here, and she's terrific, and. I said, you know, I really don't think that in the last 5 years or 10 years that anybody who's espousing this, this whole idea that the reason why restaurant prices are up and all this stuff is because people refuse to work at the wage we think they should work. I said, there isn't anybody, I don't think, me included probably, although I probably make a better stab than most, that could list the top 10 prices that restaurant people pay for, I'll use the term factors of production, which is what you're supposed to use economically, and how much they all went up versus labor, to where you can pinpoint to me and prove to me that labor is the problem right now over a 10 or 20 or 15 or 5 year span. And they look at you like you got four heads, yet they've picked up on the part that the reason why their hamburger price went up is because these lazy people refuse to work for $10 an hour. And the reason why is because government's paying them $15 to stay home, and some of that.
Well, and I don't think they're lazy people. I think they're people who are making rational decisions.
Well, right, but I mean,
you know, if you're going to pay me more to not work than to work, the rational decision is not work. And I don't think it's responsible for restaurant prices. I think it's responsible for diminished service levels in restaurants, because if you're not at full staff, then people have longer wait times and. And wait times to be seated, wait times for food preparation, all of those kinds of things. So, you know, I think that's really where it's all showing up. Not as curtailed service. You know, it's
right.
I drive by it every once in a while, and the local McDonald's still hasn't reopened the lobby because they can't hire enough people to work there.
Well, I mean, and everybody knows a person or two that is so happy to get their $300 check from the government and over whatever you get from the state. What is the state? 250 maybe? I don't even know what the Illinois number is. So you're up to like what, 500 a week, which is, you know, whatever, $12.50 an hour, right? Or if that's what the number is. And obviously you don't have to leave the sofa. So yeah, I mean, rather than having to go buy a car at these prices, but I mean, it is stunning how over a period of time in today's media world, if enough people, you can't listen. If you interview a restaurateur, the first question is, well, you got problems getting labor, don't you? Oh yeah, I got problems getting labor. And not one of them says, by the way, people's gas has really stuck it up your behind for the last 10 years, have you? Because people's gas might be a a sponsor of a show, right? So I mean it all depends on how you ask the question. I'm not a national star, but I've been doing this for a while. You can lead people pretty, you know, we can't lead the people around this show, but if I want to get some dum-dums on here, oh, yeah, so clearly you haven't been able to get the right amount of busboys, have you? No, busboys are a problem. But you didn't say, by the way, what's your biggest problem, right? You didn't say, I mean, I think there's a whole compilation of things. And so anyway, yesterday, and interesting how you look at numbers, Kevin, I mean, and you know this, and Matty, unfortunately, we've made him listen so long that he probably gets it. Look at the CPI number yesterday. Now, Thomas Frank, F-R-A-N-C-K, writes an article for CNBC, and he goes, a hot June 2021 consumer price index may not be cause for alarm thanks to a dizzying but isolated rise in used car prices. The headline CPI numbers have shocked value for sure. However, once you realize that a third of the increase is used car prices, the transitory picture becomes more clear. Wrote Jamie Cox, managing partner at Harris Financial Group. The Labor Department reported on Tuesday that its CPI rose 5.4% for a year. Well, what was it, 0.9 for the month, right, which is really high. So what's 0.9 times 12 is like a lot. They're all talking about wage inflation will be the 800-pound gorilla. I think that's absolutely wrong. They have no proof to that. But here, when I went to the CPI number, and the guy from... who's the guy? Was it Jeremy Siegel? Comes on yesterday, and he's talking about now. Okay, we counted a big rise in used car prices, right? I challenge anybody. Well, I don't know how many people have actually gone to the CPI numbers of yesterday. So let's say we have this outlier in car prices. You can either look at that and say, well, geez, a third of it's used car prices. Of course, if you're the one buying the used car. Now, you can't ever tie this in with the fact that these people are the people who are probably wanting to go back to work for $10 an hour or 12, right? So the idea that they can't buy a car now you never match that up, do you? Right? So, and, you know, whatever. You can't match that up. I mean, I did a study, and I talk about this all the time, I shouldn't, like 4 years ago, where if you bought a $5,000 junk, and somebody gave you the $5,000 and gave you the insurance, and all you paid were the taxes, the license fees, city sticker. If you're making $10 an hour, your first 65 hours of work went for paying the state for just transferring the car over to you. Okay, well now guess what? The car's $10,000. So it got even worse, right? So, but now Jeremy, the Siegel guy, comes in, and my brother's saying, did you listen to this? And he goes, check this out, because he knows I got this thing up all the time over here. And, The amount of rent didn't go up at all, hardly. I'm looking at this rent of shelter, rent of primary residence. First, they have this is, what do you think of, what part of your basket would that be, Manny? Rent of shelter. You guys are doing pretty good, and you weren't paying that much rent. I mean, when sticky that bad.
Still a big part of your basket.
How about 7.6%?
I would say it's higher than that.
I'd say it's higher than that. And what do you
say? Housing is way higher than that.
Now, what do you suppose they think that the rise is from last year?
I would say flat from last year.
Rent?
You think it went? You think it went up?
Oh God, yeah.
Why?
Well, first of all, there were a lot of people that weren't paying any rent last year.
But Audrey's renting places for people now, and it's up tremendous. I mean, that downtown, it's not. I'm talking about any other place.
Really? Yeah, I haven't seen that.
No, down in Chicago. I gotta keep taking my Chicago roots out of my thinking. But I mean, if you're talking about renting the suburbs or rent any place else but here where people want to move, it's skyrocketed. It's like housing prices.
I know housing prices have skyrocketed. I haven't read that rent skyrocketed too. I'll have to read into that.
If the price of the house went up 30% and you say I'll just rent it, you don't think it went up?
Yeah.
Anyway, they've got it going up 1.9%.
Your mortgage is locked in though, typically, right?
Now get a load of this. Owner's equivalent rent of primary residence, which is essentially housing prices, the way they put it. How much year over year?
How about you begin to guess? Let's go 12%.
How about 2.3?
Oh, that's not true.
No. So for every one in here that you picked that's high, they've got other lodging away from home, including hotels and motels, is up 17%. So the big things that are up in here are lodging away from home. So evidently, hotel. I can't imagine hotel prices went up, but we have it here. The things that
I'm trying to think, because I just I just did some searching for hotel prices. I don't think that was up substantially.
Moving, storage, and freight expenses up 17%. Domestic services up 10%. We got tobacco and smoking and cigarettes up 7%. They're a big mover. Telephone, hardware, calculator, and other consumer information items down 17%. Whatever the hell that is. Audio equipment, I guess we'll agree that stuff's down. Prescription drugs down 2.5%. I don't know about that. There are probably a couple that came off patent, but I don't know. Used cars and trucks up 45%.
Yeah, Viagra's off patent, so, it's way down now.
But they have used cars and trucks up 45.2% in 1 year. Women's dresses up 16%. Men's shirts and sweaters, get a load of this. Men's shirts and sweaters down 1.5%. Men's pants and shorts up 11%. Gee, I thought on all the Zoom meetings you'd have
That's good news for Russell.
Well, yeah, but I thought for a Zoom meeting...
Sweaters are down, and he doesn't care about pants.
Well, that's what I mean. With all these people doing Zoom meetings, there aren't any pants on.
Yeah, I'm sure he's
pants?
Listening, so hopefully he caught that shot.
Well, there should be a separate line here for cardigan sweaters for him. But, I mean, you look at these numbers, and it's pretty odd where they come from. They're not all intuitively obvious. We got citrus fruits are up 9.5%, oranges and tangerines up 7%, other fresh fruits up 8%. I guess that's fair enough, but... I get, what I'm saying is, go through these numbers. You can pick numbers out of here depending on your bent. You can, of course, basically pick a number and you can plead your case, right, Kevin, as you always can. So, it's all just used cars. I don't need to use cars, so it doesn't affect me. Okay, I guess. But year over year, they got 5.4% increase June 2020 to June 2021. And, May to June was 0.9%, which is as high as it's been in like a real long time. So that's sort of my story in there. And the other thing I was doing, Kevin, is I was going through, and a listener sent it to me for some reason, sent me the Illinois. This, I don't know if I said this yesterday. How many people do you think got PPP loans, or how many businesses in Illinois?
Oh God! What did you say yesterday? It was like 600-something thousand.
Yeah, 656,000, $38 billion. I can't even. And there's 50 states, right? Good Lord! This doesn't even count the big numbers. This is the 10 million or lower. This doesn't account like the
Illinois
United.
Would be one of the biggest, but it wouldn't necessarily be the biggest. It definitely wouldn't be the biggest.
Well, California
looks like.
But you're not counting your. United Airlines isn't here because they got way more than 10 million, right? So anybody who's in there, but I'm just going through some of the people here that you would sort of get. The guys that do, air conditioning business, Four Seasons, 4.8 or 5.8, that's a number.
We'll still need their heaters fixed.
Yeah, but I mean, when did they not be able to service anybody?
Oh yeah, well that's a good point. They didn't keep people on the payroll to not work. They kept their people on the payroll to work.
Right.
So they were getting revenue with it.
That's exactly right. And, I don't blame them for that at all. I mean, I'm not, so, cause that's the way the thing was. Field Museum of Natural History, 6.3 million. Now, did they keep all their people in? I don't know. Did they? Chicago Zoological Society, 6.4
million. I don't know if they did or not, but who cares? I guess the people who work there care, but.
Well, I mean, if you're still doing business, and you're paying people out of your regular revenue, it's essentially a bonus. Now, the Chicago Zoological Society, I think the zoos were closed, right? So if you continue to pay those people, clearly you weren't getting any revenue. So Catholic Charities, 6.4 million. I got to believe that they were totally strained and they're a lot of their stuff dropped off. I mean, I don't know. We have no idea what the.
I would think that a lot of their stuff, a lot of their services they kept delivering.
Yeah.
But a lot, there's a big chunk of that that's volunteer as well.
Right. And now you wonder what the, what your food depository or those places, I don't know how many employees they have. But some of these numbers are pretty darn high. And, you know, Midwest.
Well, they have employees for other services, though, counseling, adoptive services, things like that. And I have no idea what happened to adoptions last year.
But I'm saying if the chink in the armor here, and I guess there was no real way to split it apart. I mean, I didn't write the bill. But if you laid everybody off, I mean, here's the thing. If you laid people off at your restaurant, you didn't have any business. They gave you money to keep people essentially employed. And if you had to go back and do it all over again, I don't know why you would, since you had this big increase in unemployment numbers, I don't know why, and it got people to the point where, you know, $800 a week is not a great salary, but it's probably livable for both for people. You know, not if you got a huge house, obviously, but I don't know why there had to be this combination of the two. Why, in some places, if somebody made a lot of money, you gave, but there doesn't seem to be any different. How can I put this right? If the restaurant closed and you paid everybody, all right, that's one issue. But if the restaurant stayed open and everybody was working because you did carry out pizzas, you got paid anyway. So essentially, you got all your revenue back for the people who worked in your place, and you didn't have to give up any of the profit. And that's what I think is somewhat rubbing people the wrong way. Because there's a couple of people in here, if you go down the list, that are like, use the term garbage collectors. Well, obviously, the garbage was still collected and people still got paid. Yet they got essentially a bonus of everybody's paycheck that was working anyway and still getting paid, and it went right to the bottom line, which rubs some people.
I'm sure they had to send some administrative people home, but
why?
That's probably minimal.
Why would you want to send anybody home? I don't know of anybody. But our garbage never didn't get picked up.
I mean, that's what I mean. So that didn't stop, but did some of the office jobs for waste management or somebody like that, did those go away?
Well, I mean, that it depends.
If they weren't necessary, you know, how many things changed last year that have always been in place but aren't necessary? I don't know if you have picked up a prescription. You know, you had to sign for everything about 16 different times, and then during the pandemic, it was like, well, no, we don't want you touching anything, so you don't have to sign for it anymore.
Well, how many places?
Then why did I ever have to sign for it?
Why did you? You know, why? Some places still won't take cash. Okay, why is that? The tollway still hasn't opened up for cash.
Let's take some of the fast food restaurants. Many of them, I'm sure they close their lobbies. So a lot of people were laid off there. But they're not going back, so they changed the business model, because there are a number of those that are just saying, you know what, this drive-through only works for me. Let's just keep it that way.
We don't want people hanging around in here anyway.
I think it was Burger King. I read about Burger King, where, you know, like a third of their stores are going to wind up being drive-through only for forever.
Well, and you don't have to clean the bathrooms. You don't have a bunch of idiots hanging around in there. I mean, I guess it depends on your location, right? I mean, if you're off an expressway or something, why? But then again, you know, if you're, again, it depends on the place, Kevin. I mean, if there are
other restaurants on the a block either every direction that can take the business away from you, then you want the lobby open.
Or if you're on
the other hand, you're in Edwardsburg, Michigan, and you as McDonald's and Taco Bell are the only drive-through, the only fast food places in town. You pretty much get your say, especially if you're McDonald's. You get your say of how you're going to continue to do business.
Well, that's right. So what we have, you know, these policies that are moving forward, and we've got these tax things that are moving forward. I don't get this. The way these things are being written. I mean, so many ideas that people are having in terms of what government should do for people. I guess I'm not so against the ideas, Kevin, but boy, you look at the number. I just don't see how the hell anybody can pay for this. I mean, what I'm looking around is most people, well, I don't know about the people, most people we know, because most people we know probably are making more than 75 radio a year, so they probably didn't get these checks. I won't say most, but, you know, some, a lot of the people. But say you've got, what I'm looking for here is some sort of parity. Now, if you take the old people's view that when you hand out money for free, you know, money for nothing and your chicks for free or whatever it was, somebody somewhere has to pick up the tab at some place, right? So, now the question is, if you received your 1,200, was it 600 and then 1,400, you're 3,200 to the good, yet the government is totally broke. Now, someplace somewhere, taxes are going up. And the question is, over the next 20 years of them recouping this somehow, because they're going to have to, I don't care if it's Democrat or Republican, are you going to pay more or less than $3,000 back? And I'm going to say just about all the people we know are going to pay way more than $3,000 back, and some big, big groups are going to pay way less than what they got. And therein lies, therein is the reason why I'm against a lot of this stuff. If it was all even, if they sent everybody $3,000 because it was a bad pandemic, and they said, okay, starting 2 years from now, your taxes go up 10% a year until you make it to $3,000 and that's it for you, I guess I can roll with it, Kevin. But that's not the deal, is it?
It is not the deal. And, you know, shouldn't that just be the way we cover everything? Wouldn't it be nice if we just tell people this is what your tax bill is going to be as a result of this? So, you know, people could rationally say, yeah, I totally support $3,000 now for a tax bill later. Or they can say, no, that's outrageous. I want no part of it.
We never mentioned. Anyway, and, we got to dash for a second. SP Futures up 450. NASDAQ Futures up 54. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, Innovation and Human Resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Low and one back, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. You're listening to Weber on the board. S&P futures up 475. NASDAQ futures up 56.75. Again, we're coming back some from yesterday. We sold off actually fairly reluctantly after the CPI number came out. It took a while. It took like a three-hour delay before we went down some. Dow futures are up 9 over in Europe. We've got DAX down 19.1%. So a little bit of a change there. FTSE down 36.5%. CAC around down 11.1%. So quiet to the downside over there. Nikkei down 109.4%. Shanghai down 38. That's a full 1%. Hang Seng down 175. That's 0.6%. So a little more to the downside there than in Europe, but still not a huge chunk. Yesterday here, the Dow was down 107. S&P down 15. NASDAQ down 55. So we haven't made that back yet. Bonds have not moved at all. They moved a little bit yesterday, but still we're only at 1.39 in the 10-year. The Bund minus 0.29, so it's going to hold 1 basis point. Japan at a positive 0.01, so heading back towards 0. And again, the question I asked yesterday, with the inflation rate at 5.4% and the 1-year rate, the government at 0.8, you really got to wonder why anybody would, why you're forced to do that, and how much money the Fed has to keep pouring in there to make those rates essentially out of whack, but they keep doing it. Oil down 27 cents, 74.98, but was over 75. Brent down 24 cents, 76.25. Natural gas unchanged at 370. RBOB up to 230. It's actually down a penny, but it ran up yesterday. 230. I don't think you're getting any gas under 250 anytime soon with RBOB at 230. Gold up $8, 18.17. Silver up 15 cents, 26.29. So they're up based on, I think probably because of the numbers, but still. I mean, I think gold should be 2,000 here, but guess what? It's not. Copper down 2 cents. It's 427. Got a lot of clients yesterday want to know how they want to get involved in copper. Boy, I wish we'd have done that more at 325.7 than 427, but it might still be a good idea. Time will tell on that. Crypto up 149 to 32,491. Really? Boy, Matty, this thing's been stuck in the middle of this range for like a longer period of time than we've ever seen it, isn't it?
Really is, yeah.
What do you got for us? They're still trying to clean up the Dan Ryan?
They are. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. As Chief mentioned, there was an earlier shooting, apparently, on the outbound Ryan that has the closure now moved to 95th Street. It was at 91st, and this has traffic all the way backed up to 79th Street on the outbound Ryan as traffic is diverted off at 95th as the police continue to investigate that overnight shooting. So expect solid traffic and long delays on the outbound Ryan as that investigation continues. No issues on the inbound side, apparently. I-57, you'll see a little bit of a slowdown at 111th, but no accidents to report. Bishop Ford is all quiet. Stevenson, I-55, there's a crash on the left shoulder on the northbound side just before Lockport Road. It's a car versus a motorcycle, which is never good. So expect some delays as you're going through that area. Eisenhower looking good. Edens and Kennedy all quiet. Same for Lakeshore Drive. Off the expressways, we have some malfunctioning traffic lights up on the North Shore, Route 22 at Telegraph Road. But everything else is all quiet out there. Weather today, it's going to be a very nice summer day here in mid-July. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 84. Right now, it is crystal clear and 70 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast and a high of 103 today. Right now, it's mostly clear and 93. In sports, the American League won the All-Star game over the National League last night in Denver 5-2. It was the AL's 8th straight win, Chief. They really got a lead early and never had any issue. Tim Anderson played but did not get an at-bat. Lance Lynn pitched an inning of scoreless ball. Liam Hendricks earned the save in spite of giving up a couple of hits. He pitched one inning of scoreless ball and got the save. Carlos Rodon did not play. For the Cubs, Chris Bryant played, went 0-2, and Craig Kimbrell pitched two-thirds of an inning of scoreless ball. Chief.
Allegedly, somebody made a great grab, and Chris Bryant's last at bat with bags loaded that would have tied it. I think I would have missed it, but he didn't miss it. Hit a line drive, a rope to left field or something. The guy made a diving catch.
Oh, yeah?
So he was almost the hero, almost. Okay, I hate those diamond catches when I'm the batter.
Yeah, it's not good when you're the batter. It's good when you're the pitcher.
When you're the pitcher, it's the greatest thing in the world. It's just saying. Kevin, before we...
So the day after the All-Star game used to be the most boring day in sports, that there was never anything significant happening. And it turns out we have NBA tonight, don't we?
That's right. Game four of the NBA Finals is tonight, Suns-Bucks. They delayed it a day to not conflict with the All-Star game.
Are we going to... Well, it won't go past Labor Day, will it? We only got a few more games.
It won't go past Labor Day because they have to go back to camp the end of September.
Yes. It's kind of wild, isn't it? But
if you think there's been injuries this year, and just wait till next year, and those poor guys that have to go to the Olympics, and then they're going to get a short break. They need to figure out a better glide path to getting back to whatever the normal schedule is.
Well, the only thing is that basketball is fortunately not like football, and it's not like pitching. If the year is over, what are they going to take? 1 or 2 days where they're back at the gym shooting around? I mean, it's not a sport that you don't have to sit out for 3 months to let stuff heal to that, unless you're hurt.
Well, no, I think you do. You know, the NBA season is really hard on the body. I think that's, you're running on the hardwood courts. There's a lot of pounding. It is a physical game, even though it's not. Bill Russell used to say it's a contact sport. It's just not a collision sport.
Well, I would agree. You've got to
rest. They need some recovery time. And we saw that with the Bulls guys when they were winning championships and then go to the Olympics, because even then they talked a lot about the recuperation time and how they had to coast into the next season. I think it's a big deal.
I'm not going to debate it. I'm saying there's a lot to it. There's the travel. In some places there's the partying. There's a lot to recover from. But I'm saying, you're not going to get a pro basketball player who's going to sit on a sofa for 2 months when he goes home. I mean, the first day he's out shooting baskets. I mean, that to those guys is relaxing. And it is to us when we were younger, right? I mean, it's not being on an NBA schedule. I mean, I'm with you. You definitely, especially this playoff schedule, these guys are killing themselves in these games. I mean, you can't ever say they don't play defense after watching these playoff games. I don't think. Were you mad? You agree with me? I mean, it's not like a game in December.
Definitely not. Yeah. I think that's when people talk about ratings declines in the NBA. I think it's truly the number one reason. Everyone always tries to bring politics and things like that in it, and which is fine. I'm sure some of that turns some people off, but I think the reality is that, especially with the game management and everything else, you never know on a given weeknight when a guy's going to take the night off, whether he literally takes the night off and is in a suit on the sidelines or just kind of goes through the motions during the game, because if it's a nagging injury, it's 4 games in 5 nights, and it really devalues the regular season. And I think it turns a lot of people off. And then come playoff time, when these guys are going as hard as they can, knowing they have a day off or sometimes 2 days off in between, it's a whole different level of basketball. It's really enjoyable.
Well,
to watch.
It's totally different. It's really, yeah. I don't know if I've ever seen the difference this much, Matty. Of course, people didn't used to take nights off literally in 20 years ago. I mean, they did figurative,
yes,
probably.
Agreed.
But this is, you know, this is.
Although when you think back to it, the Bulls used to preserve their old guys routinely. You know, Bill Cartwright always had a little vacation about only to return a couple of weeks before the playoffs started.
Well,
that's true. They kind of did it in their own way.
An injured list vacation.
Yeah. And then I always remember, too, just kind of like watching games, even with the Bulls, but just that era where it was kind of three quarters of going through the motions, and then the fourth quarter is when they'd really start playing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
and then you'd see teams come back, and you'd see the defense and the intensity pick way up.
Well, you look at the Bulls teams that were in those eras, look at the third quarter scores. I mean, I would say the first half, if they had any advantage point total, it would be very small. The third quarter, their advantage had to be almost like 2-1, wasn't it? So they said, okay, let's put these guys away. Then in the fourth quarter, they'd all sit and rest.
Yeah, they were one of the rare teams that had a switch that they could flip, and they would.
Yeah. But, I mean, the guy who started all kind of all this, at least to our knowledge, was Dick Motta when he got Chet Walker at the end of his career and said, I'm only playing him, what was it, Kevin, 18 minutes a game. That's it. And because I want him playing 5 years here, not two. And he did. And he was a star for a long time here in Chicago at the end of his career. And, you know, that was so Dick Motta was the first guy, but he wasn't a Tom Thibodeau guy. He was a guy that said, Chet's going to play 18 minutes. I don't care what the game's going. Where Thibodeau, the minute it's a close game, then his 18 minutes goes to 48, right? I mean,
yeah, he really tries to win every last regular season game, and because of that, he's compiled some really good regular season records. But I wonder, you know, the Knicks, they were kind of the surprise story and sort of the team of the league in the regular season, and then they promptly got beat easily in the first round by the Atlanta Hawks, and no one saw that coming. Turned out Atlanta's pretty good. They made it all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals, but the Knicks, you know, it was just very similar to those Bulls teams with Thibodeau where, you know, we'd be the one seed or the two seed because he would grind out every last regular season win, and then come playoff time, there wasn't much of a team left.
Well, yeah, it's a...
Yeah, Thibodeau might be the classic Jerry Reinsdorf point A to point B coach, but not the point B to point C. You know, as he said about Doug Collins when he let him go and brought in Phil Jackson.
Yeah, except Doug Collins was...
Well, he didn't bring in Phil Jackson. He promoted Phil Jackson.
But Doug Collins was at the early part of his career where Thibodeau's done this at five different places. I mean, you have a much more book on
sure.
Thibodeau. I mean, I'm not so sure that Collins couldn't have taken you the rest of the way, but he had somewhat of a different team.
Well, you know, with the stuff that was written at the time was, you know, Collins had a lot of that Thibodeau in him. Now, maybe he wouldn't do that this time around, but it was a lot of that push. They used to complain about the Doug Collins play of the game. Every game he had to have a new play to draw up for the other team, and, he was... pretty focused on this game and not the big picture sometimes.
Well, he had they were doing that isolation play with him, and out of all the guys in basketball that pulled that, still I thought the two best guys that ever did it. Remember what I'm saying? Back when you couldn't play zone defense, you had to be like near your guy. So a lot of teams had two people that were like really good, and they'd move the other three to one side. So essentially, it became a 2-on-2 game on a National Basketball Association court. And the two guys I thought were just spectacular at that were Jordan and the Big O, the 2 years that they were together. Because both of those guys, one-on-one, were pretty much unstoppable. And there were no other
it's
two
Jordan,
guys.
You mean Alcindor when they were together?
No, but Orlando, the guy from Notre Dame, Woolridge.
Oh, Jordan and Woolridge?
Yeah. He was an amazing slasher too. I mean, he didn't play.
So that was the Big O. I'm sorry. When you say the Big O, I think Oscar.
Okay. But after that, the guy who was on
the medium O.
The medium O. Yeah, the medium O. or the little O or something. But yeah, he was. But the two of those guys, it would be like putting. I think Woolrich was actually more of a one-on-one slasher than Pippen. He couldn't play defense like Pippen, but. But he was a star, and he's dead, isn't he? He died real young, I think.
Yeah.
All right, Kevin, you were mentioning some of the speeches and stuff lately. I don't understand where this mentality is of we just got nothing but dough. I mean, has anybody sat him down and said you're now spending double of what you're taking in, and it's only going worse. I mean, what Carl was talking about last
week. Well, I wasn't referring to that, although, you know, that is the new plan, that even though they had this bipartisan infrastructure plan that everybody agreed they were going to do, and Biden was part of the press conference for it, and now they're saying, we're really going to do a $3.6 trillion reconciliation plan. But I was talking about voting, that, you know, that he very specifically said that the voting laws, like the one that's being in contention in Texas, where the legislators all left the state, all the Democratic legislators left the state so that they could so that they wouldn't be a quorum. He said it was the biggest threat to the republic since the Civil War. So what do you suppose is in there?
Well, you know, I was kind of anticipating you asking this question, but remember I read the Georgia one, and it looked like they were cutting down on some stuff they did before. Here's my read on this, Kevin.
They actually expanded the early voting hours or early voting dates.
Well, what I'm saying is I don't know what to compare it to. I mean, this whole for people that are picking sides here, and obviously to a certain extent you're going to pick the conservative side. I'm going to be in the middle because I don't know where I should be, and a lot of other people are going to say, God, you know, voting rights are important, like, you know, some of the Dems are. But in fact, I don't really know. With the thing, I will say this, that with the COVID thing last year, some states opened up their capabilities for people to vote by mail and by other ways before they had a really good system. And the intention was let's get a whole bunch of votes in here. Now, we know both sides are capable of cheating.
Before they had a good system, and frankly, they just sent out willy-nilly, in some states, they just sent ballots out and said, here, everybody gets one.
Yeah, I
know. We don't know who you are, but there's one coming to your address.
I'm saying, when I'm trying to be as shall we say, fair and unpartisan on this, I don't really know how this all should be worked out. I know that when you go to the polling place, there's somewhat of a discipline to it. I mean, you show up, somebody looks at you, there are people from the neighborhood, the judges, okay, they see your signature, you know, they asked me last time what if I had an ID, because somewhere along my years, I've gotten lazy. Instead of signing Thomas, I signed Tom. And when I signed up there 20 years ago, I must have used Thomas. So they said, well, we need an example that that's now how you sign your name. So I gave my driver's license, and they said, okay. So there's some discipline to it. You know, for me, it's walking, maybe 200 yards? I mean, so there's not a whole lot of discipline to it. And I understand that there's people who, can't get out of their place, people that are in the Army, people that are on vacation, people that are away on business. But how many of them really are there? I mean, do we really have to design a system where people can't walk down the block if they're perfectly capable to? I mean, I don't know where you go with this.
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
that's part of it, Tom, and part of it is that you should be able to request a mail-in ballot, an absentee ballot, whatever you want to call it. If you request it, and you can have it. The question is, what identification do you have to provide to request it? One of the more laughable things I've seen is over the weekend the vice president doing an interview and saying, "Well, that's too much of a burden to ask people to provide a photocopy because in rural areas they don't have Kinko's. You can't go to Kinko's."
Well, I do think with the voter ID. So I'm one of these guys, Kevin. If it's an okay idea, all right, now, I think if you're going to have votes being important, then I think it's important to have a person voting for himself like once. Duh. If you notice, if we decide to have a voter ID thing, okay, I'm not saying you should or shouldn't, but if we decide to do that, whoever makes that statement probably needs to understand that in certain areas of this country, be it maybe Appalachia, maybe down south, maybe on the south side of Chicago, there are people that don't have picture IDs. Okay, in other words, if you're going to make these statements, and if you're going to come up with if you're going to open up your pie hole, basically, you need the research. This is a lost art, I know, so I'm preaching to the...
I'm going to call BS on that, because there just really aren't places where a substantial number of people don't have picture IDs or can't most voter ID laws have a provision for easily getting a state ID for free.
Okay, my point, Kevin, if you would give me a second there, was I think if you decide you're going to do this in October, and the election's 3 weeks away, you got a problem. But if you say 2 years from now, everybody has to have a picture, an ID, and by the way, for those areas we know maybe people don't, we're going to drive vans in there and you can show up, and we're going to make it as easy as possible for somebody to get one of these picture IDs. But Kevin, in Illinois, last time I went, I don't have it anymore because I have my passport card ID as a second ID to my driver's license. For a while, I used the state ID. State ID costs more than the driver's license. What's that all about?
But I just tell you though that that the places that have implemented the requirement for a state ID have made it available for free.
Yeah, what I'm saying is, as long as my point was, is last year the COVID yank was either an excuse to do it or whatever. It yanked all this stuff where some states that have the power made it harder to vote, and some people that have the power didn't care who voted. I mean, is that a fair statement?
I don't think anybody made it harder to vote last year. I think they all that in many cases they made it easy, and in states that had had long-standing mail-in voting in place, they had procedures for it, and nobody used the procedures that existed.
Well,
they just sort of made it up and flooded.
Whether
that made a darn bit of difference in any election or not, it certainly made a difference in people's suspicions of the election.
Oh, sure, but I think some places closed polling places, and people who normally went to the polling places, you know, knuckleheads like me, I would have been a fish out of water. I will say this, Kevin, I don't understand why. I think I got, Mandy, did we get a ballot in the mail from, like, the Secretary of State? I don't know where the hell he got the power to send that out.
They just did it. The legislature didn't approve it.
Yeah,
I don't know if it was a ballot, but it was, like, an application to get a ballot or something.
Maybe, yeah, it might have been. But, yeah, I mean, what I'm saying, Kevin, there needs to be, from the top down, there ought to be, okay, now we're now going to make this more convenient. You don't have to go to the polling places, whatever you have to do. But I think it needs to be even, it needs to be thought out, and this is not that difficult. I don't think. But basically, both sides doesn't want, whenever you hear some, I'm going to say some bozo, get up there and tell you, it doesn't matter whether you vote for me, it's that you go and vote. I'm going to say BS on that. I mean, really?
How about this one? You have to provide identification in the Texas law to get an absentee ballot. You don't have to provide a picture of it. You just have to provide the driver's license number or the last four digits of the Social Security number on the application.
Well, how does... Let me ask you this.
That's draconian.
Yeah, well,
that's what's considered draconian now.
Well, let me ask you this: How do you split the part out? I mean, if you go to the polling place, all right, they see you, they identify you, judge from both sides signs off on you, they hand you a ballot, you go behind a screen, you walk out, and you shove it in a thing, and in theory, anyway, nobody knows how you voted. All right, now. Maybe some places are sneaky enough where they do know, I don't know, but by and large, that's the routine. Now, some places, I think it was Colorado, Lou was talking about, you send in an envelope to where you put all this stuff about the driver's license and everything on the inside of the envelope. So when you fold it over, it's not obvious to anybody just reading the front of the letter. But when they open it up, they compare all that stuff to whatever is on file with the Secretary of State. They realize that, yes, this is Kevin O'Neill. And then they throw the envelope out so as nobody can match it up with the ballot that it's inside. So now, okay, now then there's going to be somebody smart enough like Matty Weber to say, wait a minute, what if somebody challenges this thing and now it's a recount? Well, now what?
Yeah, and now you don't have source control.
Now you don't have source control on anything. So, I mean, that's obviously a horse bleep idea, right? But then how do you, other than seeing the person walk in, put the thing, and seeing them walk out, and having some people involved, how exactly do you solve the riddle of making sure that the person who sent the letter in with the ballot in it is the right person, and yet not knowing how he voted? I mean, I don't understand how you solve
that
riddle.
One of the ways that's being investigated for that is to use the blockchain technology to handle that, so that, you know, and it's interesting. I haven't done a lot of research on it other than to know it's out there, but there are some characteristics of blockchain where it's really, really hard to alter, and you control the blocks that you add to the ledger and so on. So I know there is some functionality with that could be really good for voting. I just need to learn how that works. You know what that's about for this particular application.
Well,
I know how blockchains work in cryptocurrency, and I know how blockchains work in supply chain, but I don't know how they work.
Yeah, but somehow or another, when the thing comes in the mail, there has to be two items to it. One that identifies who the person is and that he has the legitimate right to vote, he or she, and the other is the ballot. How do you ever separate those out once you got them together? I mean, you can in the ballot place. How do you do it in the mail?
Think about that. But yeah, I personally wouldn't lose control of the source documents, and I know they want for privacy reasons to put them away, to get rid of them. But that doesn't seem to make much sense, does it? Because for just the reason that you mentioned, if you have a challenge, how do you investigate?
Well, the only other way is
if you don't want that, then go vote in person. If you're worried about the privacy issue, just go vote in person.
In Chicago, I have a friend of mine, I haven't seen her in ages, but she used to be an election judge. Well, maybe she still is if she's still alive. And the year that what's his name? The guy who became head of the school board and was pretty much considered kind of a knucklehead by most people, but, you know, he had some good points. What the hell was his name?
Knucklehead running the Chicago school board. That didn't narrow it down much, Tom.
No. But he was on the county board, and he ran against Stroger's kid, and he barely lost. And then, well, anyway, this lady told me that the absentee ballots used to come into the precinct. And so if Maddie and I are to the judges in the precinct, we would look at the absentee ballots the same way. So instead of me being down the block, the absentee ballots would come in, and because I was on vacation, I got one. And they would go through the same routine, check the signature as if I was there in person. And all of a sudden, one year, they decided, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to take all the absentee ballots, which are now more of, and we're going to put those down at the county hospital. And that's when this guy said, I don't want those things counted at the county hospital. I wanted them counted in the precinct. And he had a group of people, and they marched on the county building. This has got to be 10, 12 years ago. I don't know if you remember that. And everybody said, oh, this guy's a weenie. He just won't take his loss. You know, he's a sore loser and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, wait a minute. I want to find out if this sudden change in policy affected me. Because there was no proof that it wouldn't. There was no agreement generally that this was going to happen. All of a sudden, it just happened. And now they had a year where they had like a record number of absentee ballots. And all of a sudden, instead of going to the precinct like they always have, they're going to one place. And who the hell's counting them there? We don't know. You know, I mean, there's been a lot of changes, and I don't trust any of these people, Kevin. Should I?
Let's see. Do you trust any? No, I don't trust any of them.
Yeah, so I mean,
I don't trust any of them. That's why, you know, that's why I think there may be some good technology solutions that make it immutable, as long as you don't tamper with the technology. You know, we'll see where that goes. I know there's a lot of investigating and designing going on, and we'll see what. If that has anything to do with it, but you know, we really do have a problem now. When people don't trust election results, that's a problem.
Well,
and we've seen it.
I'll say this, and we're running into some, we don't have time, so we can't get a big debate about electoral college or otherwise. But I think the idea that there's a few states that are even to the point where in five of the next 10 elections, they might be statistical dead heats. And yet, somehow or another, all the votes have to go one way because the Electoral College is insane. I mean, the idea that if a state's 50-50, that half the votes don't go one way and half the other, I mean, I don't see how that even begins to show up on a normal election. I mean, but it is, and that's our system. It's just to me, it's crazy. But we'll talk about that maybe on Friday. Kevin, take care of yourself. Who do you like tonight? You like the Bucks to even it up?
Like the Bucks, no, I think Phoenix will probably take command of the series.
Really? All right, we'll see. I think they even it up, and then
Devin Booker's not going to have another lousy shooting night like that. So if Devin Booker plays like normal, then it's going to be a much different game.
Well, are they going to put him in the game? He can't shoot from the bench.
He was Booker?
Mad. Yeah, the coach was mad at him at the end of the game.
Well. They'll patch it up.
S&P futures up 7. NASDAQ futures up 71. Be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allies, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P Futures up 7. NASDAQ Futures up 68. So it looks like we're going to make back the lion's share of what we were down yesterday after the pretty awful CPI number. Russell, how are you, bud?
I'm doing okay. Happy Wednesday.
Did you hear your name being bandied about earlier?
Not. I only listened to about the last 10 or 15 minutes, so I did not hear me being... My ears were not burning. What'd you say? And I'm sure it was just really nice.
We were just pointing out a few basic facts that how it should have been CPI, how it had to be a very good year for you in a CPI.
For me personally?
Yes.
Because I don't sell consumer products. Why was it a good year for me personally?
Well, because pants were up 11%, and when you're on Zoom meetings, you're in your underwear, so you don't need pants.
You just described what I'm wearing right now.
And then they have the shirts and sweaters. You know, cardigan's probably in there, mm-hmm. too, and some sub thing. They were only up like 1%, so we figured it was a banner year for you because what you're wearing is barely up, and what you don't wear was up. You know, you don't care about those.
Yeah, but I got to buy pants now because I got to start leaving the house soon.
Well, maybe that's why pants are going up last month, because everybody's got to go out and buy them.
That's right. Everybody's everybody changed size. Either they went on a great workout bender and they got to get new pants, or they don't fit in their pants anymore.
Which
There's
were you?
A business opportunity right there, putting together the healthy and unhealthy people from the pandemic.
That's
and
why
a clothes swap.
That's why I always used to love going to the First Look the auto show the night before. We had to wear your tux. And
the First Look. We went to that once.
Well, to see all the guys that still think they fit in their tux, but would not go buy a new one. And it probably was even, I'd say, quite a bit more interesting for me, at least, were the ladies who still thought they fit in their kind of small black dress, their formal dress, and didn't really, type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just say stuff was spilling out. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah.
Just saying.
In a good way or a bad way, or
depending on
a case-by-case basis?
Case by case, yes. Case by case.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, but heaven help you actually go out and rent one, you know. if it doesn't fit.
Yeah.
Did they
do First Look this year?
No.
People outside of Chicago probably don't know. The auto show got moved to, like, right now.
Yeah.
Normally it's a February type thing, if I remember right.
Plus it's outside. 80% of it's on the streets. It's on the streets next to McCormick Place West. It's not even in the other two buildings. It's weird.
This year's it?
Yeah.
They're not even inside?
Well, they're inside McCormick Place West, and a lot of the stuff is outside on those two streets that they took over. But it's not in.
Huh.
I mean, it's not in the south building where it normally is, or the north building, where it's all inside.
No, it's a better time of year for that. I went to, you know, it's a traveling auto show, and I went to it in San Diego once, and most of it was outside, but San Diego.
Well, one of the when I was at Allied Van Lines, like, decades ago, mm-hmm. one of their Allied Van, what do you want to call them, agents, he had the Buick thing, and he went from show to show with all the Buicks and stuff, and it was a huge contract. To say, and like you say, they moved everything from place to place. They don't sell the stuff there. Every other show you go to, much of a Luddite I am. The only shows I ever went to were the auto shows. I'd love going to the auto shows. And I used to go to First Look every year because we had a client who was the head of the Illinois Lung Association. So, you know, he'd call us up and say, "Hey, you guys are buying four tickets." He was a good client. Plus, I wanted to go anyway, but he was a terrific guy. So we would go and meet all these doctors and stuff, and it was a spectacular night. They had a hors d'oeuvres before and a big dessert bar and a bar afterwards, so we didn't get out of there till late. I mean, it was the show was just part of it. I mean, just meeting all the people there was nice. But anyway, so the hell was I saying? Those guys were, but the cars, you'd walk around and you actually got to sit in a lot of them, which you didn't if you were
.
But they never tried to sell you anything. But if you, in one year, I went to the boat and RV show. Man, they want you to buy the boat right there and you take it home, you know, because they don't want to take it home. I mean, the RVs, they want you to walk in, Russell, and drive this thing out of there. They don't want to take it out of there. I mean, last thing they want to do is take the thing home, which is sort of odd because people are walking through all this stuff. And we had, the last time I went to this first, this poor guy died, so we haven't been since. Well, plus the COVID was last year. And we had a young lady on from GM that I had met over there for the Economic Club of Chicago, and we had our deal. And she came on the show, and she was terrific. And I said, by the way, would I want one of those cars? You know, thinking like the boat show, or they actually want to sell you the boat, right? And she goes, oh, no, you don't want one of those cars. I said, well, what do you do with them? She goes, well, we eventually will sell them. She goes, you don't want one? And I go, why not? At the right price. I mean, the thing hasn't been turned on. She goes, let me help you. More behinds land in that seat in 10 days than your behind will land in your car if you keep it 15 years. She goes, those switches have been pulled more times than you will over the life of the car. She goes,
people are playing around with it.
Well, one person after another hops in there, plays around with it. And she goes, you know, we can make sure everything works. You know, and sell it to you at some kind of a discount. And obviously, the brakes aren't used. The motor's not used. The battery's probably been charged up 12 times because everything in there turned on. She says, but by and large, you don't want one. I mean, the thing is, the inside is, unless you put, you know, new seats, all new switches, she goes, you don't want it. I mean, because it's been used. I mean, I read once where the carpets they buy are the best carpets you can buy. And they throw them out. I guess you can go buy the remnants, and if you want to, they'll come up and you buy them. And she said to me, they're like the carpet. Mm-hmm. More people walk on that carpet in 10 days than will walk in your living room over 20 years. That's how worn out they are. Just from the wear and tear. What do they get? Like a million people in the place? Those shows, they're serious stuff. The amount of wear and tear and what you get and how many people get in those vehicles and so forth. But the Economic Club was interesting because they would let you get in the sports cars and in the Bentleys and the Rolls's, which you normally can't sit in, right? So Audrey gets in, I think she got in a McLaren. Did you ever see a McLaren?
I have seen a McLaren.
Well, they come up to like my waist, right? They're like this
Yeah, no, they're very low down. Thank Don Johnson and Miami Vice.
Yeah, so
way low down to the ground.
So Audrey gets in the thing, and you know, Audrey's. Let's put it this way: I could not. You might have got me in, but you wouldn't have got me out without a hoist. And so I grab her hand and pull her. She goes, "What a neat little car when you're in there." She goes, "But I think my butt was like an inch off the pavement." It was. She goes, "What if I hit a bump?" I said, "Well, you got a bruise on your butt. What do you want me to tell you?" I mean, there's no way you drive that thing. What, it went from what, 0 to 60 in like, is it 2 seconds or 2.5 or some? I mean, who buys those things? And it was only in a row of all these.
I in my hedge fund background, I worked with somebody that owned two of them. And he only used it to drive from New York City to the Hamptons. And he would always take off at like 4 a.m. when he was doing that drive so he could have fun with it.
Wow. I mean,
he hoped he passed the cop.
Why, just so he could?
They couldn't get him. Yeah. They couldn't get him. That's like, he claimed that he could, that he'd just keep going and you know, even if he passed a police officer, they just weren't even going to try.
Yeah, we were driving, this is a long time ago, 88 maybe, we were driving on the Autobahn, right? Because we're going from Holland to Denmark, and we're driving across Germany, which was the dumbest thing we ever did. Well, I won't say that, but one of the dumbest. So we're in this Volkswagen Rabbit going like 90 miles an hour. That thing was not designed to go 90, but of course, since you could go 90, we were going 90. And all of a sudden, I see these two lights in the rearview mirror. And I don't know, it didn't seem like less than a half a minute. This guy goes by me, and then he was out of sight. I don't know how, he was in some kind of Porsche. I think it was a Porsche. I could barely see the thing going by. He had to be doing 150. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he was doing 150. He had to be. He went by us like we were parked, and I was doing 90. And he was gone. I mean, I guess guys love driving that Autobahn in the middle of the night, right? In daytime, it's all crowded. You can't go anywhere. Yeah. But imagine the guys with the McLaren.
Or the Eisenhower in the middle of the night.
Yeah, well, then you got to go. Then you got to go on the shoulder though to get around people. And there's too many bumps on the shoulder.
Actually,
for a McLaren.
I just had somebody do that to me on the Eisenhower.
Go
around me on the left.
Then you were in the left lane. Russell, we've been kind of kicking it around all week, and Carl sort of started the conversation and Friday, and it's. I mean, it is part of every conversation, essentially, that we have on the show. I mean, it's in the background. And the background is, what was the mathematical term he used, Matt? It was, when you start, you know, if you look at people's, like, if you look at the inflation number at being 5% and people are getting a raise of 2% and you extend it out like 10 years, you don't even want to see where you are, right, in terms of people being able to buy stuff. And I was looking at kind of those inflation numbers, but he was looking at the debt of the government and how much it's starting to go up to the point where if you look at the numbers, you almost can't come back without some sort of a massive revision, like, you know, you're only gonna pay back 50% of 10 bond issues or something. I mean, he thinks we're perilously close to being way past the policy differences that Republicans and Democrats are essentially arguing about at such a low level. And I mean, I'm seeing it. I listened to some big debate in Congress the other day, or whatever it was, between the corporate tax. Should it go from 21% to 25%? And, of course, all the guys on CNBC that are, you know, so pro-corporate. Well, what is it about individuals that are so pro-corporate? Is it like Stockholm Syndrome, or what is it? Why does somebody care so much if Amazon pays 25%, or whether if they paid 5% corporate tax, and why would a normal person be against that? Do they actually think that the price there's some connection between that and the price, the discount they think they're getting from Amazon? Are they that uneducated? I won't say dumb. Are they that uneducated to think that there's some sort of a connection there?
Don't you think when you're talking about the folks on CNBC that they just have a vested interest in the market continuing to go up and behave well?
I think they have the best interest in their sponsors, too.
And to maintain viewers, first off, the stock market continues to have to make money for people, but also to maintain viewers, they've got to take the side that they think that investors really want, and they assume that investors don't want higher taxes.
Well, they also don't want...
I'm not saying that their assumptions are correct at all, but
But I think,
and there are a couple of guys on there that are not like that. They're in the minority, but there are a couple of guys on there that will say, "Oh yeah, you know, that doesn't need to be taxed a lot more." But they tend to get shouted down by the rest of them.
Well, they get shouted, but I mean, they never want to be in a position where Bezos won't come out for an interview.
I haven't even thought about that aspect.
Yeah, if you get on there, they'll let you know what they'll answer. And if you ask a question like you and I might ask, they're never coming back. They're going to get up in a huff and walk out.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess my question is, are we reaching that stage to where, I mean, I hear these people arguing back and forth for like, they had like six people in there. And I'm thinking, don't you guys get it? They're spending twice as much in what they're taking in. We're not talking about 21% to 24%. We're talking about like double. Just to get close.
Yeah.
We totally lost track of where we are here. It's like coming in the MASH bus with a compound fracture in your leg, and the guy says, "Here, let me get you an aspirin." I mean, are we that far away? Even last month when we talked about, before the CPI number came out this month, they talked about 0.5% increase in CPI and 0.2% increase in hourly wages. Well, God, Russell, if you extend that out 5 years, what do you got? You got today. You got hamburgers at $17 and people getting bitched at because they're not willing to work for $10 an hour. I mean, since when did a hamburger and a Coke, was it 2 hours work? Right? I mean,
God, I never thought of it. Never thought of it in that perspective. But, yeah, it was not even, you know, when the minimum wage was under $4 when I started working, all the other stuff was really cheap as well. Never thought of it in terms of the hourly wage versus can you eat a meal at McDonald's?
Well, but we had John Flanagan, went out with him last night, and he's a contributor a couple of weeks. John's a great guy. He was telling me, we were talking about this very subject. I said, John, we're losing track of when this goes on long periods of time, we lose track, and I remember this stuff, so I shouldn't. It just aggravates me. I said, in 1979, when I was working at Pullman, a guy on the line could make, I'm going to say, 18, 20 grand a year, right? You know, and Notre Dame education was four, a car was four, a nice car, like an Oldsmobile or something.
Mm-hmm.
A house was 45, you know, and now the same dude, let's say he's making 30, okay? A house is 225, a car is 30, Notre Dame education 70. How's he doing? I mean, you're not even on the same plane. Well, John launched it. He said when he was going to law school or something, he's working downtown, and wherever he was working, they had a policy that if they asked you to work overtime, like at 5 o'clock, and said, you know, you got to stay till 8, they would give you $3 towards your dinner. They'd walk around and actually put like $3 on your desk. And he goes, it was unbelievable. Man, I went over to Berghoff. He said, I had two corned beef sandwiches and a beer, came back, and I had, like, change. I mean, now, can you imagine? I mean, what would you, I mean, you're going to give somebody what, $20 for lunch? For a sandwich and a Coke and a thing of chips?
Yeah, pretty much, especially.
It's getting there.
It is getting there. And by the way, the Berghoff just reopened this week.
Really? Well, Manny, they had the bar there, which they closed. I mean, but there was across from the bar, there was a wall between the bar and the restaurant, and on that wall, people could go and they had oysters on a half shell, but they also had sandwiches. So you could get there, you could get your sandwich, sit at the bar. And in those days, people only had a half hour for lunch, not an hour. I mean, assuming you get lunch, but they would have half hour. So you could run over there, you could sit at the bar, order your beer, run over, get your sandwich, sit down, eat your sandwich and a beer, and you'd be out the door in 20 minutes. So you actually could have, you know, an okay lunch in a half hour. And then when they remodeled the place, they took that wall out and that sandwich, whatever you want to call it, station. But how many people ate lunch there for years and years, Russell? At that
Oh, God.
God,
I was one of them.
Yeah. Was there a better quick corned beef sandwich?
When we're done here, there's somebody I got to let know that they reopened.
But I mean, what was it? What was a corned beef sandwich there? Like a buck and a half, buck and a quarter, or something? It wasn't very much.
We were going in there, and you know, I know that we would take turns who paid, and sometimes it was always under $10 for both of us.
Well, Billy over at the series dug out a menu from Orlando's when we started the business, and it was like in 1983 or 84. And you know, if you match that up against what people are making, God's sake, I mean, a really good breakfast was like, you know, 2 1/4 or something. I mean, well, you know, 250 somewhere in that range, and then we're talking about a downtown place. But lunch, you know, hamburger and fries and whatever else was like, you know, $3.75 or something, if that. I mean, it was, you know, if you match those prices up, and you say, okay, they're 3 times or 4 times that now. There's no way salaries are 4 times that.
Oh no, it's all kinds of sneaky things like that. You've got your consistent thing that you buy, which is you get gas every Sunday. That's when you go fill up your car. It's not that I'm stalking you. I just know your patterns. And mine when I was teaching at Loyola, was I go to the McDonald's and I get the exact same thing. And the exact same thing has went up in a 3-year period by $2. It went from about $5.50 to $7.50.
That's a real number, Jesus.
Chicago taxes, but still, that's, you know, $2 extra. That's almost, hell, that was like 35%.
Yeah.
In a 3-year period. And there are lots of examples like that. And I think food inflation is going to get worse because, you know, the restaurants are reopening. I think we're about 0-for-5 in the Rhodes household from getting food from outside the house or going out to eat in the past couple of weeks and getting something decent. It seems like everything is subpar when we go out, and I don't know if that's because the supply chain's still a mess or what.
Well, I mean, are you taking it home? A lot of stuff doesn't travel.
No. We're eating it right. It's just a combination. It's kind of a mix.
Well, I think that some places have cut back.
Yeah, sometimes we brought stuff home. I mean, we were bringing stuff home all during the pandemic, but now, I think now that the restaurants, there are more restaurants open, and they're all, you know, fighting for customers, but also probably, you know, tapping a supply chain that's not complete, that, you know, they're getting steaks that somebody, that maybe fell off a truck somewhere.
Well, I also think that they're, I think they're not as consistent in their cooks. I've noticed
that's
that.
A big one.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, I was talking to a bar owner in my new neighborhood the other night who I randomly was sitting by, and she was like, "Oh, by the way, I own this place." Oh, she's owned it for 12 years, and they've, you know, were able to get through the pandemic. They kind of limited their hours and really cut back, but they were able to scrape by. But anyway, she said the biggest problem is she can't keep her cooks. So it's not the fact that she can't find a new cook. It's the fact that the it's varying the quality of the food. And she's like, I feel like I'm losing some regulars because nothing's consistent. And she's, you know, she's like, do you know anybody? And, of course, I asked my brother, and he was like, how much will they pay? And I think she said $15 plus bonus. And he goes, like, good luck.
Yeah.
He goes,
yeah.
You're not getting anybody good for that.
No. Well, I mean, the Tripoli has managed to they did pretty well, I think, during the mess, and because one of the guys who's the owner is a fine dining chef, so he put a pizza thing in there and a bunch of other stuff. So they've evolved. But the last few times I've been there, I've been there that much lately, and half the time Nick's cooking. So one of the owners who's always there, I mean, he's a really good cook. So if he can't find somebody, he's probably not happy about it. But he cooks. So that way, you got your consistency there, but most places can't do that. I mean, I've noticed that just about everywhere, even simple stuff. We were at the place Saturday night, and Audrey wants, creamy garlic dressing, and they give her some dressing in a white container, and it's ranch. You know, I mean, I don't think people are, I mean, I think these guys are having trouble doing everything. But I mean, the people at Ceres that I knew a couple of the ladies, well, one of them was Jay-Z. Mm-hmm. She used to be on the show. Well, guess what? Jay-Z's not coming back when Ceres decides to open. Jay-Z's got a nice job at a headhunter firm, a employee search firm, and she was just in the Miss, mm-hmm. Miss Illinois. I didn't know, I tell you this, but she was in the Miss Illinois USA pageant last week. She didn't
play. Really?
Yeah, but she was, she was Miss Park Ridge or something, I don't know. But I mean, she's a very beautiful girl and very nice, and she says, no, told me she had a great time. She didn't get in the top 21 that were listed on the website. You know, that thing was pay-per-view. I mean, who watches it? Family members and a bunch of perverted old guys? I mean, who the hell, who's going to pay to watch a beauty pageant? I mean, it's not like anybody's naked. I have no idea why anybody would do that. I mean, plus, it was like $250 for the whole thing.
My daughter is really big into dance and dance recital, and she has dance recitals and different programs like that. And in order to watch via Zoom when we were all social distancing, we actually had to pay something.
Really?
So you said pay-per-view. I wonder if it's instead of tickets, like if they're family people that want to see their, you know, granddaughter or whatever and aren't comfortable going out in public quite yet, if that's why they decided to do it that way. But still, yeah, that's kind of, I mean, other than friends and family, I can't imagine a whole lot of people decided to pay up for the Zoom meeting that was the Miss Illinois USA pageant.
Well, the other lady is, I don't know her last name, Kay. She's from Romania. And Billy says, well, yeah, Kay's, Kay was real sharp. She went and got her degree and everything. I mean, just really nice lady and sharp as can be. It's three ladies there from Romania. They all knew each other, and they all piled into a series as waitresses. And I'm going to say within 4 years, every one of them had at least gotten their bachelor's, maybe their graduate degree, while working. And, I mean, and nice as can be. I mean, but talk about go-getters. Well, she got a real estate license. She's just doing well. They're not going to call her up and come back to be a waitress, and she'll be there in a minute. I mean, who's kidding? I mean, what do they think these people have been doing for the last 18 months?
Well, Bob writes in on Twitter, he says, how much inflation is price gouging because demand is so high the sellers can get away with it?
Oh, gosh.
Well, I'm going to say to Bob, Bob is one of the few people that I've heard in this whole mess that realizes that people raise prices because they can and not because, you know, they get the guy on from Coke and CNBC, gee, Joe, why'd you have to raise these prices? Man, the cocoa nuts from God, wherever you buy cocoa nuts from, or Kenya, man, they went up and reluctantly, you know, it was the worst thing I ever did was raise the price of Coke a penny. But give me a freaking break, Joe. I mean, you raise them because you can. And if the cocoa nuts in Kenya happen to go down, you're not lowering the price. I mean, does anybody not think that other person might know economics? Right? I mean, anyway, we'll talk about that with the economics professor when we get back. S&P futures now up 10, NASDAQ futures up 80. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Owens, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures now up 12 and a quarter. NASDAQ futures up 88. We're putting the whip to it yet again. Yesterday was just a little bit. We don't care about no stinking inflation. Actually, this time we clearly are not, because the Fed is not backing off. They're continually pushing up asset prices, which the market is. So it's we've got a whole different program going than we did in the 70s and 80s, and we'll see how this one ends. I mean, I don't know. Hopefully it ends well. Let's put it that way. DAX down 20.1%, FTSE down 32.5%, CAC around down 14.2%, so gently to the downside over in Europe. Asia a little bit more to the downside. Nikkei down 109.4%. Shanghai down 38, that's 1.1%, and Hang Seng down 175.6. So they're down, you know, I'd say not heavy, but a little bit at least. Dow yesterday down 107, S&P down 15, so we're pretty much making that back up almost totally. NASDAQ down 55, and we're doubling up to the upside there on that one. Bonds, we're down. 10-year rate is actually down on these inflation numbers, which is... If you wrote that in one of Russell's papers, he's going to give you an F for that. Let's see. Inflation goes up. What will 10-year rates do? Will they go down, Smith Professor? They do what? Well, they're going down. The Bund, -0.30, and the Japanese yen almost back to zero at positive 0.01. Oil down 23 cents, but still over 75 bucks, 75.02. Brent down 9 cents, 76.40. Natural gas up 3 cents, 2.373. RBOB unchanged at 2.30. And we've got gold up 15 bucks, 18.25. That's up almost a full percent, 0.9. Silver up 20 cents, 0.8%. Copper down a penny, 4.28. I wonder if copper led all these metals. I wonder now if gold and silver might be going to be the leaders, if there is a leader to the upside. And we've got crypto up 53 bucks, 32,396. And the crypto places where you can trade crypto are sniveling because the volume is dropping because Bitcoin's not going anywhere. Eddie, what do you got for us? Trevi Weather Sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. The big concern is still the outbound Dan Ryan that is closed due to a shooting investigation from overnight that has had the Ryan closed all morning. It's now diverting traffic off at 95th Street and has traffic backed up all the way to 71st due to this investigation that is ongoing. So expect significant delays on the Dan Ryan to the point that you're going to have to get off by 95th Street.
Matty, what's your over-under on, after all this crap they're doing, arresting the person?
Well, the latest statistics aren't very good on arrest rates, so I don't have a high confidence level on that, unfortunately. Inbound side, slow-moving traffic, but you can at least get by. No issues on the Ford except for the resulting delays from the Ryan, but no accidents to report. It looks like on the Stevenson, we have a crash that's been moved to the left shoulder on the outbound side just before getting onto I-294. It's a three-vehicle crash, so expect solid delays of up to 30 minutes getting around that, even though it's been moved to the shoulder now. So that's affecting the outbound Stevenson. And then further southwest on the Stevenson, this time on the northbound side, still working on that car versus motorcycle crash that happened about an hour ago that's been moved to the left shoulder. So all kinds of issues on the south and southwest side here with traffic. Eisenhower, traffic building, but no accidents to report. Edens and Kennedy looking okay. Normal volumes there. Lakeshore drives quiet in both directions.
Weather today, a beautiful summer day. Sunshine, a high of 84. Right now it is clear and 71 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast today and a high of 103. Right now it's clear and 94. In sports, the Major League Baseball All-Star Game was the only show in town last night, and it was the American League winning for the eighth straight time. They beat the National League in Coors Field 5-2 last night. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was named the MVP. He had a two-run homer in that one that gave the American League the lead, which they were never really threatened except for Chris Bryant's one at-bat, where he almost hit a grand slam, but certainly almost hit a bases-clearing double that would have tied the game. But Bryant finished 0-for-2. Craig Kimbrell got an appearance, two-thirds of an inning, zero earned runs. Tim Anderson played defense for two innings but was left on deck and didn't get to bat. Lance Lynn pitched an inning of scoreless ball, and Liam Hendricks got the save with an inning of scoreless ball in the ninth. Carlos Rodon did not play. Chief.
So are you cynical like me and thinks the NBA is going to do whatever they can to make this go seven?
Well, I don't think it's quite to that level, but there's no doubt that a 50-50 call that could go either way, they're going to side with extending the series. I don't believe they actively go out of their way to, make it one-sided, but I do think the bang-bang call, their natural tendency is to lean toward extending the series because it's good for the league. That said, I don't know who's going to win tonight. Game four, I know our Phoenix listeners are tuning in to that game tonight. Suns versus Bucks. Suns lead 2-1. If they win, the series is probably all but over. I think only one or two teams have ever come back from 3-1 down in the finals.
So, Manny, they have no 2-3-2 series anymore in the NBA. Didn't the Bulls, weren't they all 2-3-2?
Yes, they were. Yeah, they changed that maybe 5 or 10 years ago, so now it's 2-2-1-1-1.
No matter what, no matter how close they are, even if they're...
Right, yeah. So it just evens it out competitively better, they feel like.
Yeah.
Which I agree with.
Well, it's hard... It's hard to have the fifth game not in the guy who's supposed to have the advantage's place.
Exactly, yeah. It was giving too much of an advantage to the lower-seeded team when you can, if you steal one of the first two on the road and then you got three straight home games, I mean, you can end it right there.
Yeah, it's a... Well, the Russell, back to hard economics. What is the... you are a trader... I mean, what does it tell you when the Fed appears willing and able to even bury a number like yesterday to the point where they're going to put whatever they have in to not get these bonds moved? I asked my brother, I said, what do you think of this? He goes, when are you going to figure out the bond market is totally manipulated now by the Fed, that it's not a free market at all? And is it that bad?
It is that bad. And, the prepared remarks from Powell came out this morning as well, along with the CPI coming out. And Powell basically said that they are open to still talking about eventually not buying bonds anymore. Which is basically, yeah, we'll talk about it. It's kind of it's kind of like my sister down in Memphis that I bought a condo for. She found out there were bigger condos in her building and called me up and said, do you think maybe we could upgrade? I'd really like I love the Wii. I've never even been in the place. But she said, do you think we could upgrade? I'd really like a fireplace here. And I'm going to see her in a couple of weeks. And I said, we'll talk about it then. The Fed will talk about changing their bond buying policy, but that doesn't mean anything's going to change. And I can tell you that my sister's going to continue to live in the place that she lives in.
What if she ponies up a check for the difference?
I can tell you for a fact that my sister will continue to live in the place that she lives in.
There you go. So are you planning on enjoying this visit or no?
It'll be a short conversation. So. but to the comment right before the break, where he was, asking, basically what he said was, it sounds like if. He was making the argument for this being transitory. How's that? And that's where the big debate is right now. Is this transitory, or is this, or is this something that is going to be a permanent price hike? And I do assume that there is some gouging going on there. There has to be, and we're suffering on the supply side of things. But I I don't think that's what it is. I think it's more than transitory.
Well, let me ask you this. I've not been able to...
Absolutely more than transitory.
I have not been able to weasel, gouge, whatever, the answer to this question out of anybody. Maybe you won't dodge it, because I dodge it myself. Does transitory mean that we have gone up for 6 months and we stopped going up and now it's the new level? Or does it mean we go back down to where we were 6 months ago?
If it's truly transitory, it's going to involve a drop-off.
Now, what? I couldn't get my pet dog Scruff to believe that.
Well, I'm just saying that I'm saying if it, I don't believe it's transitory. First off,
well, I don't believe it.
I think we're moving up to a new plateau. We're not. I don't think we're coming back down.
Well, if they were to change policy,
if that argument's valid, then there will be a period where, and it's not going to come back to where it was before, but you know, it like might, using a technical analysis phrase, it might back and fill a little bit.
Well, what I have a feeling from experience, but again, no hard and fast. If I were to ask a guy who really does a rigorous analysis on this stuff in his classrooms, that's why he's got his PhD, a guy named Russell. If I were to ask you, my feeling of the last inflation, which again is going to be pretty long ago, my feeling is, Russell, that at the beginning, a lot of inflation showed up. Now, it showed up reasonably quickly in oil because of the Arab oil embargo, so there was a little bit of a shock there. But it already started with the Bretton Woods going off the gold standard, probably.
The gold standard, yeah.
Like with 71 or 72. So it already kind of started a year or two before. But my feeling is that even if the people who do the CPI are correct, when I say correct, not crooked, somehow or another, and I don't know why, it appears to me to be a very lagging indicator. And the way they do their work, I guess I don't know why it would be, but in other words, when this started in 73, there was a lot of inflation mm-hmm. before the Fed acknowledged that there was. And all of a sudden they said, you know, because they played the old trick on themselves by saying it's just oil, and oil's going to go back down and we'll be okay, which was their way in those days of saying transitory. They hadn't invented the word yet, but that was their idea. If we could just get these pesky oil prices and these crazy Arabs to lay off and they go back down, we'll be okay. When in fact, they weren't going to be okay because the money supply was going up and it was happening all over the place. It just hadn't shown up in the numbers yet. But near the end of it, the same way, when Dr. J and I, we already started trading in the 80s, and they put in Volcker's in charge, and he's squeezing the living bejesus out of the place. Russell, there was no inflation. There was none. And yet, the numbers kept popping out inflation for probably 18 months at least before the numbers started to change, which led me to believe, based on my observations, that this thing is somewhat of a lagging indicator. I really believe, but I never could prove it. I wish, you know, if I had the time to. I think that if Volcker would have let his foot off the brake a year earlier, he would have gotten the same result, and we might have saved the savings and loan industry. I think he made a very critical error by keeping his foot on the whatever pedal he was on for as long as he did. Just like these guys are way past the time where we need to buy bonds today, and yet they can't, maybe because they said they were going to do it or whatever it was, or it's ego or whatever it is, they can't stop it. There isn't an economist, in my opinion, and I'm asking this as a question, anywhere in this world that says these guys need to go out and buy $10 billion worth of crap today. There isn't anybody who says we need it. I don't think. Who would that person be? So, I mean, if I'm right.
I'm going to say they're not really an economist, but we can loop back around to the cheerleaders on CNBC that are very much into the stock market continuing to perform well and people being interested in stocks for their ratings. So they're gonna make the argument that all is well and nothing to see here. But in reality, no, I think there are a lot of us that are very close to these situations that have seen these things play out in the past that know that this is not gonna end particularly well. And when you look at the market, the markets are not, for a little while back in the spring, interest rate markets going farther out were starting to price in some sort of rate hike at some point. They pushed that out to 2022, which is not as far out as the Fed indicated, which was 2023. But you know, the financial markets are, it's not like there's this reality that's being sold to us in the press and the financial markets are saying something else. Financial markets are saying the exact same thing right now. Now, that means it's going to be a pretty nasty adjustment when the markets realize that inflation is not transitory.
Well, in your trading lifetime, I mean, mine, mm-hmm. I'm aghast by this because when I learned all the sages in the world, the Marty O'Connells and the people who were the sages that were on the floor and even the people like at Goldman and stuff, nobody ever believed that even the Fed over a long period of time was bigger than the market. Because we had seen central banks all over the world, like, because currencies were a big deal back then, and I'm sure you remember that,
mm-hmm.
where the central bank of Japan to save the yen would run out and buy yen, you know, and take them off the market to pull the supply down from yen. And at the end of the day, yen's still down. And all they did was make basically a horse bleep trade and lose money, right? But after a week or so of that, even the central bank of Japan would sit there and look at each other and go, we can't keep doing this. All we're doing is losing money, right? I mean, we're not accomplishing anything. But the Fed, they don't seem to have any problem with an inflation rate now pushing, well, 0.9% in 1 month is a lot. I don't think you can necessarily times it 12, but of saying, we don't have a problem running out and buying these bonds today. We'll punish anybody who thinks that the one-year rate, that some guy who invests for 1 year ought to get 6% because that's how much his dollar is declining. We're going to punish that guy right now. I feel this way. I've been beaten to a pulp on that. Not, you know, I haven't lost money for people doing it because I've been very careful. But I would never, when something was so obvious yesterday that nobody in his right mind would buy this 1 year or 10 year rate at this level, go out and just short these bonds. Because I know right now today these guys are capable and more than willing of overwhelming the market, and they're up to $8 trillion on the $8 trillion on the balance sheet, and I don't think they'll hesitate to go to 10 to prove their point. Now the question, Russell, is someday somewhere is this guy going to come in front of Congress, and every congressman's sitting there with battle scars from people calling him saying this inflation's killing me, where they're just going to say, if you don't turn around, you're not getting out of this room with your job. I mean, I think that's where we're headed. And I don't want to see that.
No, we don't want to see that play out very quickly like that. Yeah, there's that. We have all those really fun Wall Street sayings, and the one you just described was "Don't fight the Fed." But some people have done very, very well fighting the Bank of Japan, or really fighting the Bank of England, where they continued to prop up their currency and then they just gave up.
Well, they gave up because they realized it was
at some point they're going to run out of bullets, I guess.
Well, but the Bank of Japan didn't just print yen. And they said, oh, yeah, you didn't like a billion yen? Try 30 billion yen. See how that works, and just jam it right up. But these guys are willing to do that.
Yeah. Maybe our status as the reserve currency allows us to push it farther. You have to figure out, well, what are the differences here? And their central banks of... you know, with the currencies that were somewhat of reserve currencies, but aren't anymore. What's going to be the catalyst, and how are we going to see it come in about a week in advance so we can get set up for it?
Well, I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're not going to see it a week in advance. It's just going to be.
Well, I've been on record for 10 years now, Russell, saying that the catalyst is going to be a 1% or close number on the inflation rate, which we just got yesterday, where people are sitting there going, I don't care what these people are telling me. It's not true. And yet, here we are. Bonds are up today, not down. My feeling is, if the Fed was known to be, if they were to said this morning, we're done, we're not buying anything more, I think we'd see quite a change in the market. But they don't, I don't think right now the attitude is if they have to double their balance sheet, they'll do it. But I don't see how in the long run, you have people, bonds you're selling at less than 1% when the inflation is 5. I mean, people are going to not want to lose 4% a year for, I can't imagine making that trade for a client. Can you?
Well, I know for a fact that because the consulting firm I work with, EQ Derivatives, we just did a systematic outreach of about 100 plus global investors. And one of the top things they're trying to do is figure out how to replace yield because they're not buying bonds. You know, well, what can we do systematically to within the derivative market to maybe equate bond-like returns? But they're not getting them for bonds. And that's and our final question on those outreach things are usually, what's keeping you up at night? And in a shock to inflation, or really a shock to inflation was probably, it's an open-ended question. And that's the one that they're all the most concerned about.
Well,
they really and if there's this widespread professional investor expectation that that's what's going to happen, and everybody's positioned for it, what kind of reaction does it actually have to the market? Plus, you have the Fed that'll probably try to prop the markets up. If we really do get catastrophic inflation data that looks like it's not transitory, and people start to believe that. What trades are out there for you right now?
Well, I mean, I think that you could probably make, even if you're in the transitory camp, where this is, then you have to put a number on inflation next year, this year, the year after. Your number has to be 3. It might not be 8 or 9, or 9 like mine is, but even at 3, you don't invest people's money for a year at 0.8.
Yeah.
I mean, even if they're right, and I'm wrong, and I want to be wrong, by the way, if they're right and I'm wrong, you still, I mean, it's the inevitable. How do you eat 2 pizzas and drink 5 beers every night and lose weight? I mean, how do they maintain basically a zero interest rate for the federal government at the same time you pump so much money in the system that you degrade the dollar that you need to be paid, that people are paying you back with? You're paying people back with, and oh, by the way, run the market up for your buddies. I mean, you can't do all 3 of those things, can you? Or they seem to be, at this point. Good.
One of those legs on that 3-legged stool is definitely going to fall on you. The one thing that if you do think that inflation is not transitory, stocks are not going to be the worst place to be. But just because there's nowhere else for people to go.
Well, how do you
know what I mean?
That's the million-dollar question for you, Russell, right now, because we have a few minutes. There seems to be two schools of, two patterns of inflation. Let's put it that way. The pattern we had in the late 70s, we being the U.S., in the late 70s, and probably the same pattern we had after the Civil War, but, not too many people were around for that one, was the inflation impacted interest rates. Interest rates went up to where people were getting the inflation rate plus real rate of interest, and the inflation or the interest rate being so high caused all the asset prices, your stocks and everything else, to come flying down. Because if I get 12% in the bank, the last thing I need is to hope some guy sends me a 12% check for a dividend. So it essentially buried our stock market. Yet every other, virtually every other place, the Weimar Republic, Iran, Venezuela, Argentina, runaway inflation caused a runaway stock market price. It went just the opposite. In the Weimar Republic, when people were walking around with a bushel of cash to buy a loaf of bread, the stock market was what, 2 million? With some number you couldn't even approach. Because it did what you're talking about. Now the question is, are we going to be in camp 2 this time, like a third world place, or are we going to react like we did in 78s, where these interest rates are going to go flying up? and you're going to sit there and tell Jeff Bezos, I'm not waiting for you to send me a check another decade when I can get 12% at J.P. Morgan. I mean, it's going to be one.
Oh, yeah, if the interest rates go up, but are the interest rates going to go up enough to justify switching into the bank? And I just can't. I just don't see that happening.
Well, if it doesn't,
and the reason I don't see that happening is the banks. You know, typically what they're supposed to be doing is they're supposed to be getting money from depositors and lending out at a higher rate. Well, they don't need depositors to get cash to lend out. They can get it from the government.
Well, that's my point. Yeah, the government continues to buy.
You know, are rates for individuals going to go up? Probably not. The rate on a mortgage might go up. You know, the interest rate cost to us may go up, but I don't think the other side of it, I don't think we're going to see a benefit from it. Not that it's a real benefit, but I don't even think we'll see the perceived benefit that interest rates go up on CDs or whatever.
Well, then we're back to what we talked about a minute ago. They're going to end up having to put $1 trillion into the place every 4 days. Just increasing numbers. Anyway, we'll talk at you later. Russell, take care of yourself. Have a nice week. SP futures up 17 now. NASDAQ futures up 102. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.